Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
If you want to do a search online, you know where to go, right? It's Google. If you want to buy word processing software or a spreadsheet, most of the time it's Microsoft. Don't know if you've noticed, but Microsoft's working on its own search engine. And today, Google returned the favor. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Vanguard, offering investments designed to help individuals and institutions reach their long-term financial goals at Vanguard.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Great to have you here on this Thursday. It's February 22nd today. And it's probably no accident Google chose today to get into the world of business software. This afternoon, the search company announced a product called Google Apps. It hits the market just as Microsoft is peddling the latest version of its Office software. And it's a change from Google's regular business model, ads, ads, and more ads. They get the company more than 90% of its revenue. Ashley Milne-Tite took a look at whether Bill Gates and company ought to be worried.
The main advantage over Microsoft is price. Businesses pay $150 a person for Microsoft Office, whereas Google Apps is being offered for just $50. And you don't have to be tethered to a particular machine to use it. You access the software over the internet from any device. John Battelle is the author of Search, a book about Google. He says Google insists search always will be its priority.
But it's very clear to me that with an announcement like this, Google is doing what Wall Street expects of large companies with very large revenue bases, which is to grow into new markets.
Microsoft, he says, should be very concerned. That's not to say it'll necessarily be easy for Google Apps to conquer some companies' reservations.
All that information that they're creating and manipulating and sharing between employees is up online, and therefore there's a concern that that information may become unavailable due to outages.
Still, he says this is the way software is going, away from shrink-wrapped packaging and onto the web. Porter Bibb of Media Tech Capital Partners says Microsoft has a daunting worldwide network of 450 million users of the Office suite. But
if Google gets 1, 2, 3, 4% of that in the first year, they will consider this a raving success, and that would represent a 10% increase in the lift of overall annual revenues for Google.
So, he says, let the battle begin. In New York, I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
On balance, it just wasn't a great day for Microsoft. A federal court has awarded Alcatel-Lucent $1.5 billion worth of Microsoft's money in a patent dispute over digital music technology. In Washington today, underground fuel storage tanks, like the ones at your corner gas station, they're leaking a lot. And that's a bad thing. The Government Accountability Office says taxpayers are due to get a $12 billion tab for the cleanup. Our Washington Bureau Chief John Dimsdale has more.
It costs, on average, $125,000 to clean up one underground spill. And the GAO says the public's responsible for some 54,000 leaky tanks. Mopping up the spills is a state responsibility. Washington helps out with a federal trust fund that collects a tenth of a cent per gallon tax on gasoline. There's $2.5 billion in the trust fund, and it's growing. But the Environmental Protection Agency's proposal for tank cleanup next year would be less than the interest the trust fund will earn. Some members of Congress and environmental groups think it's time to dip more deeply into the reserve. Ed Hopkins is with the Sierra Club.
It just makes the numbers in the budget look a little better. What they should really be doing with this money is spending it to solve a lot of the problems that communities have with underground storage tanks leaking.
The director of the EPA's Office of Underground Storage Tanks, Cliff Rothenstein, confirms there are spending constraints on his agency.
It counts against the bottom line of our budget, which means if there's an increase in one program, there's a decrease in another program because we're subject to an overall budget.
While Rothenstein says the EPA and states are making progress with regular inspections and requiring better equipment, GAO recommends the government do a better job of making sure tank owners have enough insurance to cover cleanup costs without sticking taxpayers with the bill. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
You know, investors just had a case of the blahs. Today we'll have the details when we do the numbers. We'll be right back. California legislators have moved one step closer to changing the national political debate. Today, a state assembly committee voted to move up the date of next year's presidential primary from June to February. Governor Schwarzenegger said he'll sign that bill, but candidates aren't waiting around for the ceremony. John McCain and Barack Obama were out here in Los Angeles this week. Hillary Clinton's coming next week. Former New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani hit the rubber chicken circuit a couple of weeks ago, and he was entirely upfront about how expensive politics in California can be.
This is the size of a country. If you're running a California primary, you have to say to yourself, I'm running in a country. I'm not just running in a state. 37 million people, 8 or 9 media markets, and I think that I think it'll have a big impact. So the short answer to it is you're going to have to spend a lot of time here.
We gave Wade Rendlett a call to get a sense of how that time and money might tip the political balance. He's a Democratic fundraiser in San Francisco. Right now, he's dialing for dollars for Senator Obama. I asked him whether the early primary means candidates will have to raise even more money here.
You know, I actually don't think they're going to be asking for more money. I think they're going to be spending more money. They were going to be asking for as much as they could possibly get out of California, famously the ATM of national politics. Often presidential campaigns are 10, 15, 20% funded by just California donors alone, and all that money is exported. So the question is whether or not you want to have 100% of those funds exported, or you actually want to keep some of them here, have some of them spent here, and then it has this very important spin-off effect of, well, we're actually talking to some California voters and listening to them and making sure that our issues are being addressed, which, quite frankly, are very different than issues in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, South Carolina, Oklahoma.
Add it all up for me. How much do you think the two major party candidates, all dozen of them or however many it is, are going to wind up spending just on the primaries?
I think it's going to be in excess of $1 billion. It's an unprecedented number. It's going to be outside the public finance system because the public finance system, sadly, is a 30-year antique at this point, which needs some radical renovation to make sure that it is relevant to 2008 and 2012 coming forward. But $1 billion is a lot of money. It's a lot of money that's going to get spent not just on TV ads. It's going to be spent on Spanish language radio. It's going to be spent on rallies and on having real staff here in California instead of just two or three fundraisers for each candidate, which certainly I think is better than taking all of our California money and exporting it to other states where that would happen.
Let's flash back to 1992, though, when Bill Clinton was not incredibly well known, had Jennifer Flowers and all kinds of other scandals dogging him. He went out and shook every hand he could find. Could the same thing happen? Could you bounce back from that sort of thing in the dynamic that exists today?
I think you put your finger on the one big difference between what happened then and what happens now with the California primary being moved up. With the size of the media buy and the importance of the media and the free media and what would happen to somebody if they were hit by a scandal 2, 3, 4 weeks right before the California primary, I don't think the $50 million that you would have to spend just in the California media market would even then be enough to pull you out of that problem.
And if they're dead in California politically, they're dead everywhere financially, right?
Well, they're going to be dead financially everywhere, and it's very hard given that Illinois is probably moving forward to the same day as California on February 5. New Jersey is probably moving forward. Florida may well do it. Texas may well do it. These are huge electoral states. Personally, I believe that this campaign, the primaries for both the Republicans and the Democrats, will end on February 5th of next year.
The primary schedule is compressed. I mean, we've got a year primary schedule now. But doesn't that, on the other end of next February, a year from now, doesn't that mean the general election schedule is elongated and that changes the financial dynamics there immeasurably as well?
It does. I think everyone's going to be looking at a $300 to $400 million general election. Maybe you could get by on $200 million. These are very expensive endeavors, and the longer it is, the more expensive it is. The old saying that, you know, the election starts the day after Labor Day or on Labor Day, that's in September. That is an ancient wisdom. Now, you're going to be starting on February 5th in your general election. Take a couple of weeks off, go to Hawaii, come back the 1st of March, and you're going to be going full speed to Election Day in 2008.
Wade Rendlett's a Democratic political consultant and a fundraiser up in San Francisco. Mr. Rendlett, thanks a lot for your time.
Thanks for having me.
Here's today's indicator. We're nowhere near bottom in the housing market. Luxury builder Toll Brothers announced its quarterly profits crashed nearly 70%. Of course, if you're shopping for a home or an apartment, you might be thinking prices are pretty healthy. In some places, owning property is still way too expensive, which isn't to say there aren't deals to be had. If you've got a working knowledge of theoretical physics, you can buy near San Francisco for less than $20. From KALW, Nathaniel Johnson explains.
Here's how it works. String theory says the universe is made up of all these little strings that are vibrating in very complex ways. In order for those vibrations to work out, there have to be multiple dimensions beyond those we normally experience. When artist Jonathan Keats realized these extra dimensions were out there, he saw dollar signs. So Keats bought the extra-dimensional rights to several properties in the Bay Area, and he's selling them here at Modernism Gallery in San Francisco. The problem is, the extra dimensions are kind of inconvenient. You can't exactly build on your new plots. There's no way people, much less building materials, can get onto them. So Keats is offering a heavy discount. For Oscar Villalon and Mary Ladd, the price is right.
Okay. Here's 12 and 50.
Oh. All right. When's the last time anyone used exact change to buy property?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Why would you want something, a piece of property that you can't actually fit yourself into?
We're buying the idea of having property, which up until now has been nearly impossible.
Plus, you see most apartments around here. It's not a stretch of the imagination to move into some place you can barely fit into. That's par for the course. Yeah, you never know. If it works out, you know, great. If not, I think in the end it will pay off for us one way or the other.
Yeah.
Especially since it looks like other people are buying. So that's just going to drive up the price of our investment right now.
That's right.
It's already going to be worth more than $12.40. Look, see? As soon as anyone buys, boom. Yeah. We could turn around and sell it for $15, $20. Easy.
Eating frenzy will begin.
I figure in 600 years, this thing will just be brilliant. You know, it'll be like the old Dutch buying up land in Manhattan.
Yeah.
In tight real estate markets, the necessity of housing has been the mother of financial invention. You could say that this is just another innovation, like interest-only loans, to make the dream of property ownership possible. In San Francisco, I'm Nathaniel Johnson for Marketplace.
There's a pretty standard thing that happens when a big corporate merger is announced. Shares in the company being bought usually rise. Shares in the company doing the buying usually fall. Don't know if it's because they're just healthier, but Whole Foods and Wild Oats are the exceptions that are proving the rule today. Both companies closed up more than 13% this afternoon. The pair announced yesterday Whole Foods would pay about $500 million for its smaller rival. Commentator Alex Markels worries the deal will just add to the rising price of natural foods, like organic kale.
Let me first go on the record by saying that I don't really like kale. It tastes like a cross between spinach and broccoli, only it's tougher and stringier and more sour. But I know it's good for me. At least my wife and her friends say it is when they serve up dishes like kale and barley au gratin. And so I shop it out at our local grocery stores. In a health-obsessed town like Boulder, there used to be plenty of choices. The local co-op stocked it. Wild Oats, too, so did Alfalfa's, and another locally owned store called the Ideal Market. That is, until Wild Oats bought both stores out and seemed to raise the price not only on kale, but on everything else, too. Then came Whole Foods, otherwise known around my house as Whole Paycheck. Its parking lot is the Boulder equivalent of a NASCAR race. Drivers with Give Peace a Chance bumper stickers cut each other off as they angle for the best parking spots. They do the same thing inside with their shopping carts, where the crowd at the fish counter can get three people deep, even though the wild halibut can run $20 a pound. Thankfully, there's never a line in front of the organic kale, but like the fish, it's the priciest in town. That's why I was hopeful last year when I heard Wild Oats plan to open a big new store across the street from their arch rival. I figured, great, it'll be just the thing to bring out the best kale and the best prices in both of them. But now Whole Foods is swallowing up Wild Oats, which means they'll not only own most all of the natural food stores in town, they'll also have a stranglehold on the organic kale supply. All I can hope is that the Federal Trade Commission will keep that fact in mind as they consider whether to approve the merger. Either that, or I'll have to ask my local Walmart to start carrying it, although I bet theirs will taste just as sour.
Alex Markels is a writer at U.S. News and World Reports. You can write to us through our website. It's marketplace.org. Contact is the link you want to click on. Coming up, profiting from third world debt.
For somebody to swoop in and snatch that money away so that it can't be spent on health and education, we feel is just completely disgraceful.
But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial slipped 52 points today, about 0.4%, to close at 12,686. The NASDAQ edged up 6 points, about 0.25%, to finish at 2524. The S&P 500 ticked down a point, closing basically flat at 1456. JCPenney shaved off nearly 3.5% today. The leading store and catalog company reported depressed fourth-quarter net income. It also projected disappointing first-quarter profits. And upscale clothes retailer Abercrombie & Fitch took off over 2% after warning its first-half results may be unimpressive. In the construction sector, more bad news. We talked about Toll Brothers. The company chipped off nearly 3% today, but the Friedman Billings Ramsey Group remained on solid ground. Shares in the real estate investment trust shot up around 10% after it swung into profits in the fourth quarter. Overseas, the markets were mixed. Bonds fell back home. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 4.73%. You're listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, managing money with a focus on consistent results over the long term. Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Want to hear something on Marketplace again? Help is as near as your home computer. To find audio archives of past programs and additional special features, just go to the internet and log on to our website. The information you need when you need it is only a few clicks away. Just head over to marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Friday. President Bush checks out alternative fuel automobiles on the White House South Lawn after meeting with transportation fuel experts and researchers. Over 800 young cancer survivors and caregivers turn out for the annual conference for young women affected by breast cancer beginning in Arlington. And an oral tradition of the American West continues with the Texas Cowboy Poetry Gathering in Alpine. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. What do you do if your economy is overheated and inflation is spiraling out of control? Well, you could raise interest rates, or you could do what Argentine President Néstor Kirchner's done and shoot the messenger. He's fired the guy in charge of calculating inflation, and he started playing with the numbers himself. From the America's Desk at WLRN, Marketplace's Dan Gretsch has more.
Inflation in Argentina in January was 1.1%. Or was it? Today, workers at Argentina's statistics agency hung a banner near the presidential palace that read, "No more touched-up stats." They chanted, "1.9%, as in 1.9%, the actual inflation rate, according to independent economists.
Most people would say it was a PR disaster for the government.
That's Michael Casey, Argentina bureau chief for Dow Jones Newswire.
The numbers themselves are a sort of secondary issue to the perception that the whole thing is being managed and manipulated.
Argentine President Néstor Kirchner has made attacking inflation a central strategy of his government. He put price caps on hundreds of products used to measure inflation, banned beef exports, and prevented utility companies from raising rates. The strategy is not really working. Last year, inflation was 10%, the second highest in the region. So he's developed a new formula for calculating inflation, a move that helped spark today's protests.
For the international markets, of course, this is very, very negative.
The Eurasia Group's Daniel Kerner.
A significant share of Argentina's debt is adjusted by inflation. Once inflation is not reliable, it is unclear how to value these assets and how much they will actually pay.
Argentina already has the stigma of the largest debt default in history. Koerner says playing with the numbers will further erode investor confidence. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
When Amelie Mauresmo collected her winner's check at Wimbledon last year, it was about $53,000 lighter than Roger Federer's. Put it another way, the women's champion got almost 5% less than the men's winner did. The world's oldest tennis tournament has awarded smaller prizes to women for more than 120 years, but no more. Marketplace's Amy Scott now on the changing times at the All England Club.
Just last year, Wimbledon defended the gap between men's and women's prizes by saying the men did more work. To win a match, men have to win 3 sets out of 5, women just 2 out of 3. But the U.S. and Australian Opens have awarded equal prizes between the sexes for years. Bloomberg News reports that for the last 6 years, more U.S. viewers have tuned in to watch the women's final than the men's. And the All England Club decided its policy no longer made business sense. Donna Lopiano is CEO of the Women's Sports Foundation. She says in golf, men and women play in separate tournaments that air on different networks and draw different crowds and advertisers, so it's easier to justify different pay.
Whenever men and women compete together in the same event, there's no way you should be trying to separate these markets.
Lopiano says Wimbledon's move sets the bar for other sports, but sports journalist Diana Nyad says tennis is unique. Even if the ball moves a little more slowly during a women's match, the play is just as exciting.
You know, the strokes can be as beautiful, the drop shots just as feathered. It is quite an evenly entertaining and fair competition.
Other sports are addressing the women's pay gap on their own. 2 years ago, the New York City Marathon awarded the female champion $30,000 more than her male counterpart. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
If something can be bought or sold, you can bet some clever businessman will try to make a market for it. Everything from stocks to student loans, it might be mortgages or derivatives, or the Zambian national debt. Some smart businessman bought part of that, and now he's trying to collect. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports on a lawsuit that could affect third world debt forgiveness programs everywhere.
Having lost the case, Zambia is now bracing itself for the final tab. If it's anywhere near the $55 million claimed, it will hit the country hard, says Gracewell Mwanza, a Zambian who lives in the UK.
What it will mean is 6,000 teachers not recruited. There will be no medicine for health centres, especially in the rural areas. And poverty reduction programs are going to severely suffer.
It wasn't meant to be like this. Zambia has had vast quantities of its debt written off. The country's supposed to be benefiting from a high-profile and widely supported campaign.
There is a unique opportunity for making an impact. Make poverty history in 2005.
Nelson Mandela, at a rally organised by Christian Aid in London, put his moral authority behind calls to cancel third world debt. But he and the other campaigners may not have reckoned with one of the more colourful characters on the financial scene.
Goldfinger.
An American financier, Michael Sheehan, who's jokingly used the name of the James Bond villain, has been linked to an investment fund that snapped up some of Zambia's debt before it could be written off. The fund bought it for just over $3 million and then sued the Zambian government for $55 million, the full face value of the debt plus interest and penalties.
For a commercial company to come in and try and make a huge profit and take this money away so that it can't be spent on health and education, we feel is just completely disgraceful.
Tricia Rogers of the Jubilee Debt Campaign says this obviously is a vulture fund in action.
For somebody to swoop in and snatch that money away to feather their nest and making, you know, what is it, 1,600% profit or something that they were trying to make on their original investment, I think is totally reprehensible.
Our objective here today is crystal clear. Make poverty history.
Campaigners have called on governments to clip the vultures' wings to make it illegal for them to buy up deeply discounted third world debt. But, says Alan Beattie of the Financial Times, this is a legal minefield. Governments would be advised to steer clear.
To change contract law in just the case of certain countries, of low-income countries, would be enormously difficult, and it might have all sorts of repercussions of which they would be unaware.
He says having different rules for different countries is asking for trouble. But, says Gracewell Mwanza, something must be done. He claims other so-called vulture funds are circling. They must be deterred.
It is, you know, totally unacceptable, in my view, in a civilized world to have such arrangements where it's getting money by extortion.
If Zambia has to cough up $55 million, he says, that would blow all of the money the country would have saved this year by not paying interest on the cancelled debt. Debt forgiveness, he says, was not intended to line the pockets of wealthy financiers. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by A.G. Edwards, caring for nest eggs for more than 120 years, with a commitment to provide objective financial advice. Additional support from the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
These final notes, the White House says we've got to keep an eye on hedge funds, but the Bush administration says we don't really need to do anything about them. There have been calls for tighter regulation of the often risky funds, any regulation, in fact. But a presidential working group made up of market regulators and administration officials said today it's not time just yet. Instead, it offered new guidelines to boost the amount of information investors can get their hands on. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson said the guidelines will guard against systemic risk. Also, this from Washington, major U.S. airlines said today they'll review and update their customer service plans. They saw what happened to JetBlue last week, and they're worried about Congress stepping in. There is already a bill on the floor in the Senate to that effect. And that's Marketplace from American Public Media. Today, the Dow fell 52 points, 0.4%. The Nasdaq gained 6 points, about 0.25%. The S&P 500 lost about a point, closing, yeah, we'll call that flat. Our editors include John Buckley, Margaret Koval, Karen Lowe, Stacey Vanek-Smith, and Lisa Tucker. Next time, a bubbling controversy over bottled water.
It's a registered trademark. We don't want to share it.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Hope you can join us for that tomorrow.
American Public Media.